This is episode 73 of the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops with Mark O'Shea. In this episode, we focus on the opportunities of products like Azure and Intune. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.ciaops.com/publications. There you will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this can be downloaded immediately at www.ciaops.com/publications. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, I'm joined by a regular guest, Mark O'Shea. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, Rob. It's been a while.
Yes, it has been a while. It's about time we got together and we chewed the fat over what's happening with technology. But since it has been a little while, do you want to maybe introduce yourself to the listeners and just let them know who you are and what you do?
Yeah, okay. So I'm a currently a Windows MVP on the expert IT pro side. So my ongoing joke there is, if anyone ever says to me, "Who made you the expert?" I can point my finger at Microsoft and say, you know, they gave me that title. So I've been able to use it a couple of times, and people don't find it as funny as I do, because normally I use it in hostile situations, so it tends to not work that well.
Well, I think you also need to let people know that you were with Microsoft.
Yeah. We'll cover that. Yep. So, and also I did work at Microsoft for 20 years, so I finished up there in 2012. So yeah, a lot of Microsoft background across quite a few different products. Categories over the years, as you know, and probably the way that a lot of people know me is probably through, you know, a lot of the work that I did during the early days of SBS getting into the marketplace. So and a lot of Windows Server, Exchange, you know, the whole bringing Active Directory to the market when we were moving away from NT domains. So we're talking about, you know, quite a few different changes in the way the markets operated during that time period.
Yeah, like I said, it's been a long journey for both of us. We've both obviously known each other for a while, and we've come from, you know, an SBS style background where everything was on prem through to a sort of, you know, I suppose a hybrid, to obviously getting it to a situation now where it's more and more about the cloud. And I think that's what we like to focus on mainly, is that one of the big changes I've seen once I've sort of finally understood it is what Azure is all about and how that is going to play a very, very big impact on the SMB space. So how would you go about describing what Azure is to someone who, a technical person who may not know or understand exactly what Azure is?
Okay, well, I'll probably take a step back a little bit just to do a little bit of a historical perspective on it, because I think you were probably like me in a lot of ways where the first couple of years of Azure being in existence, I didn't really care about it, primarily because it was something that was aimed at developers. And I'm not even going to pretend that I've got a portion of dev skill in my body. I just don't work that way. But then over time, as you started seeing some of the other bits and pieces lighting up, so, you know, some of the IaaS capabilities, so as soon as some of the networking pieces started lighting up, as soon as the virtual machine capabilities started lighting up, and probably the more recent one that's really starting to, I guess for me, just show people what it's really all going to be about, all of the different Azure Active Directory related services that have started springing up. So we're at the point where we're way beyond just looking at something like DirSync just as a way of getting some of these user IDs and passwords into the cloud. Now it's a matter of, okay, well, now we've got them in the cloud, we want to start doing a lot more with them rather than just using them to access Office 365, for example. So for me, that's what's been pretty exciting over the last 6 months or so, as some of these beta features have been turned into production level features. And some of the hopes, I guess, that I had in terms of, is this where it's going to head, have started coming true.
I think one of the big changes is that for me, my epiphany came when I was looking to upgrade a machine that I used to migrate SharePoint. So taking it from, say, 2003 WSS version 2 up to Office 365, which is 2012. And I had a number of virtual machines on a laptop to do that. Now, that laptop was obviously becoming a bit old, and I was looking to what should I do. And before I went out and bought the laptop.
I think I know the laptop you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Bit of a hunking machine. But anyway, so it turned out
Yeah.
that I could then achieve exactly the same in Azure. So then I ran up, started running up virtual machines in Azure, and then got more and more into it. And it's like at that point, the light went on for me. So one of the things that I do is a great example, and I think that all resellers could do, is basically set up a test Office 365 environment. You can connect it to Office 365, put the applications on there, set up PowerShell, do all that sort of stuff. So when you go out to do an Office 365 demo to a client, you have a machine and an environment ready to go. You don't have to necessarily bring a laptop. So that means I can do a demo on anywhere that I've got a browser, be that a Macintosh, be it a Windows PC. So again, and it's just grown from there. And I look at things like machine learning, all these areas which you could grow into, and I think it's a fantastic option. Now, one of the things that I'm disappointed with is the lack of reseller take up of Azure. So the stats indicate that two-thirds at the moment, two-thirds of Azure business is done directly with customers without a partner involved. So only one-third of the Azure business at the moment, which is growing at over 100%, a year, is being done with partners. So again, it seems that most traditional resellers are sitting on their heels and not jumping in on this Azure. Now, part of it may be a lack of understanding, part of it may be, a fear of the unknown, a fear of the cloud. But the more I use it, the more I begin to work with it, the more I see how fundamentally important it is to have these sort of skills. I mean, do you agree with that sort of statement? Is that something that, IT resellers?
No, I'd point out probably one of the things that I'd say isn't being properly represented there is that there just hasn't been a good go-to-market strategy for a lot of SMB partners with Azure. So as much as they may still be providing some degree of services around it, unless they're taking up an EA and hosting things on behalf of a customer, and that's a huge financial incentive, or sorry, a huge financial burden, I should say, for a smaller partner, you'll probably find that there's a lot of people who are doing bits and pieces here and there with it. But it's generally just easier to let the transaction go through the customer's credit card because there's nothing like partner of record fee capabilities that are there
Yeah, and I agree. And I think,
for Azure.
yeah, and I was going to say they're pushing the open side of it, and it's a complicated billing with tokens and all that sort of stuff. But I understand the billing, and I think it will improve and down the track. But I think to me, that's still an old world model. If you're focused on buying a product, adding margin, reselling it, or getting partner of record commissions, you're going to miss out because the real benefit, the real thing is this is the technology you need to be in to carry your business forward to the next level. So I think that, again, if you're still stuck up on the billing like you were perhaps in the Office 365 and just looking at partner of record fees, you're really missing out.
Yeah, and I think this is, I know the two of us have had this conversation, in person a few times, and I don't know, what we've chatted about. I can't remember what we chatted about last time I was on the podcast. But I think one of the things that we've got to be careful of is we tend to pay a bit more attention to the developments that are happening here than a lot of, a lot of partners who are out there who, probably not the ones who are on this podcast because they're actually listening and trying to learn more things. But when we were doing crisscrossing the country at one point doing the Office 365 launch events for competing distributors, and when we caught up in Perth, and we were sort of drilling each other on, what are the things that have caught you by surprise? Because we weren't expecting huge amounts of technical skills or technical knowledge in the channel at that point. Because then, they wouldn't have been coming to that type of event. But I think just the general lack of awareness and the I think we had ongoing jokes about the top 10 Q&A where we could just rattle off the same 10 questions to each other that we knew we'd get time and time again. And I think with Azure, it's even more complicated in some ways because it's, it is really starting to open up some very different opportunities to what Office 365 does. And It's probably from the, you know, if we're talking about it purely from the infrastructure as a service perspective, I think the thing here is that a lot of people should be more comfortable with this aspect of it. Whereas the people who were a bit concerned about Office 365 and that they didn't have, you know, complete unfettered access to, you know, as a SharePoint web farm administrator or as, you know, the Exchange admin, for example, you know, once you start working with IaaS and you've got control of the VMs and you've got control of the network, for the people who really do want to dig in and get their hands really dirty, you know, sure, you don't have access to the physical hardware. But I see that, you know, for those people who really, really want to stay hardcore with the tech and be a lot more responsible for what's running, I see Azure's IaaS options as really being a, you know, a good alternative for those people.
So I think that, yeah, I think that's the easy step. I think that you're right. You know, we tend to look, and, you know, being ahead of the pack, I suppose, or, you know, committing ourselves to these sort of technology, we perhaps see the things coming down the track earlier and may not understand, you know, an incumbent business model. But I think that it's getting to the point where that it's now a situation where it's becoming so important that you don't have to obviously adopt it and put it into your mix, but I think you need to start using it so you're at least aware of it. And again, Microsoft does make that possible for most partners with free credits. And I think the most logical step, as you mentioned, is to start using virtual machines, now even just for testing. So, you know, this gives you this Hyper-V base, and you can already, you know, that's already taken care of by Microsoft. You can then build, you know, the virtual machines on top of it, start them up, start them down, you know, test them, do all that sort of stuff. Do
get it networking. Right before you do your first deployment for customer.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, again, what I've seen, the interesting thing, the comparison is back in the early SBS days, a lot of resellers were obviously loading up the betas, and they were trying these things, and they're pushing all the features and providing feedback. But now in this modern, more modern age, perhaps, I don't see that happening. And now that could be the fact is we've moved away from a SMB product specifically to more enterprise focus. But on the other side is there's that added business opportunity to have a look at. But I think, like you said, the virtual networking and the virtual machines are the easy step for most resellers to take.
So even from there, it's a matter of, you know, fire up a VM that, you know, might be your emergency VM that you can access from anywhere in case your laptop dies while you're on the road or something like that. There are all these different scenarios that you can, you know, that you can come up with that keep you happy. And, you know, I'm not saying limit it to that, but sort of use that as a starting point. You know, take a look at things like the Azure Remote App, where now you're getting, you know, your remote desktop services as a managed service. So you've got, you know, all of these different things where, you know, if you take a look at the way that either you work or the way that your customers work, the way that I try to position some of these things to some of the, you know, groups that I've had to talk to recently is with something like Azure Remote App. Yeah, if all of your employees are on site and they require, you know, instant access to RDP sessions and it generates a lot of traffic and it's really, really graphically intensive work they're doing, et cetera, you're not going to get rid of your on-prem remote desktop server just yet. But for a situation where you've got people who are traveling remotely, they need access to, you know, office applications, they might need access to line of business applications, for example, all of a sudden hosting that stuff out in the cloud or with a hosting provider, you know, whether we're talking about with Microsoft, with Azure, whether we're talking about, you know, using one of your, you know, another hosting provider you've worked with previously, there are these different solutions now where Azure obviously starts bringing some different things to the game around the virtual networking and the Azure AD pieces. But, you know, you've got such a rich set of options to start working with now that, you know, I think it's crazy to not, you know, if you don't, not even looking at some of these things now, just to get an idea of, you know, what options you do have to present to your customers.
Well, I think the big thing is I think a lot of people are scared about the transition. Now, there is obviously a step to be made learning-wise, but if you've based your knowledge already on, you know, TCP/IP, networking, servers, services, installing software, you already got the majority of skills that you need, and they translate directly into the Azure world. Okay, there's a few differences and whatever, but the step is really not that great. It's a matter, I think, of just getting into it and using it. And again, part of it is that I think that now is the good opportunity to start playing with stuff, learning about it, do it casually, like you said, before you start doing it. Now, the other side of it is if you look at it from a business point of view, is not many other people that your peers are probably doing it. So again, there's a business opportunity to jump to the lead, perhaps, and start offering this and promoting this as a service. Because again, if 2/3 of clients are picking this up without partners, they're going to need help, because there's no way they're going to necessarily do it 100% right all the time. They're going to need an IT provider with the skill set to bring into this environment. And again, I think that there's, again, good technical reason to do it, and there's good business reason to do it. And there's a lot of incentive that Microsoft and others are putting in play to do this. And it's one of those times, like early on in the Office 365 space, to say, look, guys, you know, now here's the time to start playing Get Familiar, because once we get beyond this point, things are going to accelerate even faster, and, you know, it's going to be more difficult for you to come on board. So I certainly think that you're right. This is now the time to start getting your fingers in the pie and start playing with it.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, you called out that, you know, things are, you know, the pace of acceleration or the rate of acceleration and improvement, yeah, it's just getting faster and faster now. So it's, you know, and I think all of us now are at the point where, as much as you'd love to be paying attention to all of the different stuff that's happening with Azure, you can't do that. You have to say, okay, look, these are the subset of services that I'm interested in looking at. And I think this is one of the important approaches that, you know, if you're in a situation where you've got to support multiple vendors, you've got to support multiple products from multiple vendors and deploy them out to customers, you can't just sort of throw out a blanket statement saying, I want to do something with Azure. You've got to be specific and say, okay, I want to invest my skills in these areas and, you know, and take it from there. Because if you try to pick up everything that's available on Azure, you're going to give up before you've even had a chance to investigate, because you'll go, I don't know where to begin. There's all these different options and I don't know what half of them even mean.
Yeah, I think you're right. There are so many options. I think that's one of the big differences that Azure brings to the game. There, again, you know, strengths and weaknesses there. There's the opportunity that there's so much stuff you could do if you, for example, had a developer bent or mobile services or machine learning or something else. But the core traditional skills that you used to on-prem, like virtual machines, virtual networking, and Active Directory, in some subset are available there, and that should make the transition easier to do. And I think you're right. I think the thing is to basically say, right, these are the things I'm going to initially concentrate on. And if you're a larger business also, I think that this may be an opportunity to give employees that opportunity to go and play with the system. You don't necessarily need to know it yourself in great detail, but maybe it's an opportunity to get an employee looking to take it to the next level, to get them up to speed and give them an opportunity to grow.
And I guess if you look at it from in terms of the, you know, the employees who always want to tinker and always want to play, Azure is a fantastic sandbox for this stuff. Being able to test all of these things out, and even like if you're using your, you know, one of the subscription, you know, the $100 a month subscription offers that's included with, your MPN or whatever. There's a lot you can do with that, whereas sometimes people will say, I'll fire up a VM with 32 CPU cores and 16 gig of memory, and, you know, 10 minutes later, it's like, oh, I've run out of credit for the month. So if you're careful with that, you can get a lot of, interesting scenarios tested. You can shut the VMs down when you're not using them so that they're not costing you CPU resource time, etc. So that, yeah, there's definitely a lot you can do in terms of building out, you know, as you said earlier, you know, demo environments that you can show customers. But it also means you can have your own test and play environment sitting alongside it, because I think we've all been in a situation where we've got our demo environments and we decide to start playing with it to test something out and we end up breaking it. And we can't figure out, and, you know, because we're doing it late at night, we haven't done any kind of documentation, etc. So, you know, having these different sandboxes on different virtual networks, etc., different VMs that aren't communicating, I look back to the days where I used to have to travel around with 2 to 3 laptops and a whole bunch of hard drive caddies, where we used to have to copy, do restores of images from one machine to another at the end of sessions, etc., so we could be ready to go again. And I just look at, you know, the advances that we've got now, and, you know, if we had something like Azure available back then, yeah, it would have saved me a lot of backache and a lot of shoulder pain.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that for a lot of people, they may not be aware of the resources they can call on tap. So again, what's possible is, like you said, is you can power up a virtual machine, and then if you don't need it, you can shut it down. So that's basically how I operate when I do migrations. I power a machine up, do the migration, copy the files out, copy them to the next machine, spin them up. And again, so what it means is when I do a SharePoint migration, you do what's called a database attach, and when it does that, it converts the SharePoint information. Now that process depends on the size of the database plus the processing power you're running it on. Now, typically if I was running on a virtual machine on my laptop, I was limited by how much RAM and the processing power. But again, I can now pump that machine up to a Godzilla style, huge amount of resources, but only run it for maybe 3 minutes instead of 3 hours to do that conversion. Yeah. And that's a huge, flexibility.
And I think even the flip side on the IaaS side is a lot of the time people will also, when they're looking at something like Azure and they're working their way through the pricing calculators and the pricing models on the website, and they go, holy crap, some of this stuff is pretty expensive. But it's, part of the thing there is first of all, picking the appropriately sized virtual machine for the workload you want to run. If you take a look at what we do a lot of time on-prem, we give a lot more resources to VMs than they really need just because memory is so damn cheap on-prem. We never, it's cheaper for us to say, let's give this domain controller 4 gig of RAM, because it's cheaper to do that than to actually do any kind of monitoring or troubleshooting to see, what's a good amount of memory to keep it, running smoothly without having any performance issues. It's like, well, it doesn't matter. Just give it 4 gig. It won't cause any problems. So with, as soon as you start having to pay for the different resources, you start looking at it going, well, hang on, what do we really need here? And as you said, if it's something that you need to scale up occasionally, you scale it up occasionally. And I had a VM running which had, it was like a pilot for one of our customers where we had 6,000 users sitting on, it was like the 768 meg or 1.5 gig VM in Azure. It had 6,000 users sitting in there. It had DirSync running. And we didn't have any issues because the workload didn't need that much memory. Nothing in there was really that time sensitive because there was very, very little traffic. Whereas normally if you're saying to someone, it's a domain controller and we're putting DirSync on it, people start going, okay, we're going to need this much because there's SQL sitting in the background. But in this case, it's like, well, we didn't need to do that because it wasn't an environment that anyone was really interacting with. We were just pumping new users into it via PowerShell and then letting them synchronize regularly. So, so it takes, sometimes you have to take a step back from the way that you have been doing things for a while.
Yeah, and I think also too the other thing that you've got is this flexibility. This, like, so again, you take a virtual machine and you start it with the lowest, like you said, the A1, the very simple machine. But then if you do need to upgrade it, you shut it down, you then pump it up to an A2, an A3 with more resources and fire it up again, and that's your upgrade sort of done. So again, that sort of flexibility we could never really get on premise to be able to, monitor these, sort of things and scale it to exactly our need. And the other side of the coin with this is that they're constantly adding new machines all the time. So we went from having normal SCSI disk now to an option where you can go SSDs. So again, we're getting more of these options because they're able to spread these costs over, large install numbers. And I think this is the other thing that's changing dramatically, is that the actual hardware or the actual resources in the data center are constantly improving, constantly being scaled up, constantly getting better and better and better. And this is happening every day. Whereas on-prem, you would typically buy a server, maximum spec that you could get, and it would typically sit there for three to four, maybe longer years, and you'd never be upgrading it. Now with Azure, you've got this opportunity to say, in a month's time, this machine isn't meeting our spec. We can then upgrade it or take advantage of something else or do load balancing. All this stuff that was so difficult to do, especially in the SMB space on-prem, has now become so much easier because the resources are there on a pay-as-you-go basis.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess one of the things that does come up, going back to the whole pay-as-you-go and some of the pricing pieces is, sometimes it's hard to get people to sit down. So if someone's really a very, very pro cloud person and someone's a very pro on-prem version, it's hard for them to find a common ground when it comes to here's what the actual costs are of running these things in the cloud versus here are the costs of running them on-prem. Because a lot of the time on the on-prem side, you know, things like, okay, you're really taking into account the aircon, or you're really taking into account, you know, the power requirements, the space that's being utilized, et cetera, and, you know, all of those little bits of maintenance that need to go on over time. But then you also see situations on the cloud side where someone will say, look, it just costs this, you know, per month. And it's like, no, neither of those are correct. You know, they've both got costs that aren't necessarily hidden costs. But if you're trying to sort of play one against the other and you're really, you know, distorting the truth, it's not going to help anyone.
Well, I think, again, it's very hard, like you said, is to compare, you know, one with the other, because they are so different, especially in the SMB space, because we're moving from, you know, all you can get your hand, you get your hands right around an SMB solutions, put it all in one room. Azure's a complete opposite end of the scale with an enterprise-style environment with running data centers, and that's a completely different mindset, and licensing is different, and payments are different. And I think that, you're right, is part of it. Now, that requires a change of business model, and I think that's, again, where a lot of people have struggled. They've basically, you know, started their business model, and it has worked well, and it has, been the same as many people over time. Now, we're at a point where that business model, I believe, certainly has a finite limit. There is not, it's just not going to continue on infinitum. So now they have to make a shift at some point to this new model, and that's a really tough change, because everything they look at is different. Now, that's the negative. On the positive, you can look at it and you can say, you know what, that opens up so many more opportunities. So one of the examples is like you said, if you run an Azure machine 24/7, yes, it can be expensive. But on the other side, you have got the option now, as you said, to turn it off. Now, that may not work for everybody, but that is now an option you never had before. You could automate using a PowerShell script that could power those machines off at 6 p.m. on a Friday and power them up at 6 a.m. on a Monday and potentially save the customer money. Now, that may not be relevant at the moment, but again, I think it just gives you more of the options. It's a matter of opening, I suppose, being open to these sort of options and thinking about, you know, here's the opportunity, rather than trying to shoehorn the old way of doing into what essentially I think is a completely new model.
And I think that's one of the things, if we could sort of change our approach to things, whereas I think we all have our certain things that, you know, that we do on a regular basis that we go, hang on, we can do this smarter, we could automate that, we could get rid of some of these repetitive steps. But for all of us, some of these changes definitely do take take some time there. But I'll give you an example of a customer that I had to go and see and that we've done a deployment for recently. And this customer actually blew me away with some of the things they were asking during our initial meeting. So the initial conversation was around, they wanted to start moving some of their SharePoint pieces into SharePoint Online because some of the services that were being offered in SharePoint Online weren't going to be available in SharePoint on-prem. So for them, it's like, okay, that's some stuff that we want. So normally people looking, you know, a lot of the time people say, okay, it's something that's going to be Exchange driven. But in this case, it's a customer who said, look, we're happy with our Exchange stuff on-prem at the moment. Our clients are happier with our Exchange on-prem than us hosting email in the cloud. So we didn't really push it. And then the next thing was, it's like, okay, well, as soon as we started to talk about DirSync, they said, oh, look, we don't need, you know, we don't think we've got any spare Windows Server licenses to run, because they were running, they're running SBS, I think 2011, in-house, and I'm just not a fan of putting DirSync onto an SBS box. Even though people say, oh, but it says it's supported on a domain controller, but it doesn't say that it's supported on an Exchange server anywhere. And, you know, and I do, you know, in most cases, I think, you know, for most people who've dealt with SBS over the years, it's a matter of, you know, there are things that you choose to do and there are things that you go, well, we don't have to do it this way. So one of the things that we're looking at is going, okay, well, we could buy another copy of Windows Server to run this single, effectively, DirSync workload. And then I said, well, what have you thought about using, you know, an Azure VM? And we can, you know, we can set up, you know, site-to-site VPN, and then we can do the DirSync from an Azure VM across, you know, it's going to be sitting in the data center, it can get straight into Azure AD. So we're actually able to go through and do a fairly rich deployment where, you know, we got, you know, elements of Office 365 deployed. They did all Surface Pro 3 deployments. moved all of their phones across to Windows Phone, and using now using Intune to manage the devices as well. So we've actually, so from some conversations where it's like, okay, well, you know, they're in an industry where I thought there was going to be resistance to some of the suggestions, but it was actually their IT guy, their in-house guy, not their existing partner. It was their internal IT guy who was so far ahead of the curve in terms of the things he was asking about that I said to him, you know, most people that we chat to don't even know what these things are. You know, this is making our job a lot easier.
Yeah, and I think, again, you're beginning to see, I think we are reaching this tipping point where more and more people are coming on board, and I think part of the message that I'm trying to get across to, you know, what still are the majority of especially SMB resellers is, you know, you need to be looking at this stuff. You don't need to implement it. You don't need to be rolling out for your customers. It's not going to necessarily, you know, change your world tomorrow, but it's something now is the opportunity to start looking at. There's enough information. There are enough people who are leading the pack who are, you can, you know, go to and ask questions, and now's a good time to get involved in it. I think that the longer you wait, the more difficult it is, and again, the opportunities are being missed out. So, and I think one of the other things too, which is perhaps got a bit of a sideline here in all of this, is you mentioned there was Windows Intune. I mean, that's basically taking...
Oh, sorry, we've got to get used to saying Microsoft Intune now.
Okay, so the thing now is with Microsoft Azure and Microsoft Intune is that it's now transformed itself, and it's a different, I suppose, a bit of a different animal than what we thought of it initially when it first came out.
So I'm at the point now where I'm not quite there, but I'm almost at the point where I'm starting to position Intune as just a core piece of Microsoft's cloud infrastructure, because you've got things like the Enterprise Mobility Suite, which include that as a part of it, but also now the Office 365 mobile device management capability enhancements that came through, that's all just leveraging a subset of Intune. And I was very happy to find out they were just leveraging a subset of Intune, because it would have driven me nuts if they built that stuff out themselves. So for me, it's now, you know, we're now at this point where we've got, you know, Intune sitting there in the background where Office 365 is using it. You've got System Center is using it in the background. You've got Enterprise Mobility Suite not really using it in the background. It's just one of the components of the suite. But it went from something that I was sort of looking at going, okay, maybe I've bet on the wrong horse here based on the direction that it was going. But lo and behold, you know, it's turned around, and now it's like, it's, to me, it's really, really exciting what it's doing now.
And I think that's, again, that this is, you know, again, you see it as an opportunity is, you know, part of it is maybe you can choose to specialize in it. Maybe you need to work with a partner that specializes in it, but it's giving you these other opportunities. And one of the big things I say to MSP clients is, you know, their traditional model is charging a per month price on servers, desktops, you know, other devices, printers and that, as a maintenance. But when you ask them is how many of you are providing some sort of management capability on mobile devices, phones, tablets, none of the hands go up. And you say, guys, you know, they're sort of outselling desktop PCs 3-1. And again, one of the opportunities in the Microsoft sphere to start managing this sort of stuff quickly and easily, I believe, is Intune, which unfortunately, again, a lot of partners haven't even had a look at.
Well, what I thought was funny was that WPC this year, I got a special invite into the server tools booth at the keynote. So we were sitting up high looking down on all the little people, and we had custom breakfast, etc. And the Intune, the Microsoft Intune name hadn't been announced yet, but I'd sort of been advised that it was, you know, a name change was coming, but nothing too drastic. And during one of the keynotes, someone referred to it as Microsoft Intune, and I was sitting right next to one of the Intune PMs and said, is anyone else going to catch on to that? And they're like, oh, I hope not. But look, calling it Windows Intune has been a stupid name. So I shouldn't say stupid. It's been an inappropriate name probably for like 2 years or, you know, close to 2 years now. As soon as the mobile device management pieces came into it, you know, having it hooked up to the Windows brand, you know, not as a Windows wasn't a good brand, but Windows just wasn't the right brand for it for a while. So now the, you know, Removing it from that, it's like, look, it's just a Microsoft product. It'll manage, even at the moment, it'll do a better job of managing some non-Microsoft devices than it does at managing Microsoft devices. So, so it's definitely a very, very different Microsoft and Intune team there from what we've seen in the past.
Well, again, I think the thing is that all indications are that 2015 economically will certainly be a very challenging environment, especially for the smaller businesses, especially in Australia, due to the winding down of our mining boom and still some of the economic issues around the world. But for an IT provider, I think that this move to the cloud is beginning to open up lots of opportunities, and I think we're beginning to see people understand that it's providing more opportunity, it's allowing you to do more things. And you know what, at the end of the day, it's still technology. Now, they're always going to be challenged with it, clients are always going to need people to help them with it, and that's where the opportunity, I think, is to grow and to move the business to the next level. And in many cases, I think that it is being made easier and easier every day, and it's important that if you are in the technology business that you do look at this sort of stuff, because it's really what clients want. This agility and price competitiveness and pay as you go is really what the customer is sort of asking for, rightly or wrongly, and now we're getting the tools. And I think one of the big pluses that Microsoft is bringing to the game now, we're beginning to see, is this tighter integration between Azure, Office 365, Intune, the desktop apps, all of this stuff which is sort of being floating around and not quite connected. You're beginning to see the ties together. You're beginning to see the connections become stronger. You're beginning to see how the integrations plan is going to work. And I think that's a pretty powerful story for most businesses.
Yeah. And if you take a look at what's happened inside of people's networks, where you've got ADs deployed and then other things build on top of that. I think we're effectively at the point now where we're seeing Azure AD in that same place, where we've seen some major things like Office 365, et cetera, that have been leveraging it for a while now. But you can start to see now all of these other little services like the rights management service, et cetera, that are starting to add,
Hello.
What, can you hear me?
Nope, you're Hello? Back. Yep, you're back.
Okay. I think one of the important things there is that, as we saw, the capabilities of Active Directory on-premise improve over the years in terms of, not just what it delivered, but other things starting to plug into it. We were already seeing that just moving so quickly inside of Azure AD as well. So now where you've got it, where it can do the detection of SaaS applications that are being used, providing the My App portal, et cetera, there are so many things now where you're looking at going, okay, well, do I really need to, in the past I may have had to sort of consider maybe going down the ADFS path for some of these things, but all of a sudden it's like, hang on, I don't need ADFS now. I could, maybe do some of this stuff through Azure AD Premium. Even the free AD Premium client, not necessarily the premium client, for example.
Yeah, and look, I think the reality is there's still a lot of ifs and buts, and there's a lot of understanding, and what can it do, and Azure AD is different from on-prem AD and, all that sort of stuff. But, this is where IT people have always had their skills. This is where they get paid to work out all this information. And again, it's very much a focus of Microsoft. So I think it's very much, if you're in the Microsoft sphere, it certainly should be something that you're focused on. So I think that obviously we need to look at, summarizing all this, bring it together for people. If someone hasn't looked at that Azure and Intune and those sort of tools and technologies, I mean, what's a recommendation? They've obviously got Action Pack, which will give them access to this. What's the best way, or what should they be looking at doing, do you think?
Look, I think like anyone who hasn't got themselves, or sorry, any partner, I should be clear, who hasn't got themselves signed up for an Action Pack, you really should do it. For me, one of the things that's been interesting over the last year, some of the things that Microsoft's been pulling me back into has been activities that have been targeted around some of the breadth channel, not just the deployment or the breadth their size, but digging down deeper into the system builder and the reseller world again. And it's like some of the conversations there are really, really different in terms of like there's nothing that I would need to say to you to convince you to, get an Action Pack subscription, for example, because you know what the benefits are. Whereas in some of these places, you've got to convince people that getting an Action Pack subscription is a good idea. And like, but it's going to cost me $500 or whatever. I'm making a number up. I don't know if that's how much it costs. And I'm saying, look, well, if you're not seeing that amount of value out of what's included, like, are you actually really doing any work in the IT field? Especially now you start taking into account, $100 of Azure credits a month, some Office 365 licenses that are included. But it's one of those things that pretty much pays for itself straight away. And there's just so much software that's included. So I'd always push people down that path. So as much as we may be saying to people, look, it's gung-ho for the cloud, realistically it's gung-ho for hybrid solutions with a mix that makes sense for the customer. And the Action Pack is the entry point for partners who want to get into it. As much as people might say, oh, look, I can just download the eval copies from TechNet, et cetera, they're time-bombed. You don't want to have to build out environments that you know are going to expire. Build them out using, the proper software. You've got internal usage rights, et cetera. So I'd really put a lot of emphasis on telling people to, get their Action Pack subscriptions. And now that you've got, that annual element of, Azure and Office 365, etc., it's a different approach for some of the people who may have bought Action Pack 1 year and then sat it out for a few more years until there was another major round of releases, even though they weren't really supposed to be using the software in those down years. I think some of this stuff around the whole, it's a subscription. We've got to get used to the concept of, with a subscription, while we've got it, things are working. When we don't have it, things will stop working and will get taken away from us.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that, like I said, you can open it up and you can fiddle with it and you can, push the buttons. And I think part of it is you really need to have come up with some need or some project. So for me, it was SharePoint migration. Now, obviously, it's going to take me some time to understand this and get it to work, and I'm going to have a couple of false starts to get it. But I think that's the trick. I think you need to say, okay, we want to see if we can use Azure to do X, Y, and Z. And again, it's just a test environment, but I think that's the best way to do it. I think the second thing is that when you start doing this, I think the documentation and the learnings that you take from this are so important to start documenting as you can use this going forward. And the third thing I'd recommend is you need to hook up with the information sources around Azure. So what what's new, what's coming down the pipe, what are the things are they releasing? Get in those sort of channels, get in the blogs, follow the people who are the thought leaders in Azure so you can see what's coming down the track and learn from them. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every time, and there's a lot of people out there already doing it. So they're the key things. So again, find a project, implement it, start using your resources, make sure you document it, and then look for the thought leaders, the people who are pushing the envelope so that you can learn from them is basically what my suggestions would be.
Yeah, and for these things, the Azure team blog site, that's probably, for me, that would be the one that I'd tell people to really pay attention to, because that's where, any new features, any preview announcements, et cetera, are going to be made there. And if you're not paying attention, things are going to get released and you won't know about it. And you'll be reinventing the wheel, not knowing that there's actually a new option you can click on that gives you some of those capabilities.
And I think that's the important thing. I mean, things are moving so quickly. You've really got to look at being as effective as possible. And a lot of that is leveraging off and standing on the shoulders of other people who have already done some of the work. And there's plenty of information out there. And you do need to devote some of your time to playing around with these technologies, using them, understanding the new model, the new billings, how they can be applied. Because at the end of the day, sooner or later, you're either going to come across an opportunity with something like Azure or Intune, or your customer is going to come to you asking for this. So it's, again, better to be ahead of the curve, get into it now, look for the thought leaders, and start playing with this stuff so that you are ready when that question or when that inquiry comes.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we better round it off there, Mark. What we might do is just get you to let people know how they can get in touch with you if they have any more questions or want to contact you about anything that you've discussed here today. So what's the best way for someone to...
Okay. So, on Twitter, at intunedin, and my blog site is intunedin.net. And I've got a whole bunch of new posts on, getting, that'll cover off some of the things we've spoken about today. So, really how to start extracting value out of Azure for SMB customers. Because I think one of the big issues that, that we have sometimes is we'll get a message delivered from Microsoft or one of the other vendors, which is assuming you're, several hundred people or several thousand people in your organization. And you've lost interest before you've even read the second paragraph. So these will be more focused on smaller customer scenarios and, what some of the different services are that you can leverage very easily.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll put the links to all that detail in the show notes, in the resources, so that people can refer to them. Make sure that you keep up to date with that. And again, if you've got any questions, I'm sure Mark would entertain those quite happily. We'll obviously get Mark to maybe come on in a few more episodes, and we can discuss in a bit more detail. Maybe we can focus in on just maybe one part of Azure and do a bit of a deep dive on that and take people through that if Mark's up for that sort of...
Yeah, definitely.
And we can pass on that information. But from me, the best way to get in contact with me is via my blog, ciaops.com. Keep up to date with what I'm doing. A lot of stuff I'm now doing around Azure is also in there. So the blog is the best place at blog.ciaops.com. You can find me on the Twitter as well at @directorcia. And I think with that, I will thank Mark very much for his time and all the information that he has shared with us and with our listeners. And I suppose let him get ready for New Year's.
Okay, chat to you soon, Rob.
All right, thanks for that, Mark, and thanks to everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast. You've been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.